Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey, fellow law entrepreneurs, welcome to episode 7, where we get a chance to talk with my friend Lynette Whitfield, a federal sector labor and employment law attorney here just outside of Washington, D.C. Today, you're going to hear Lynette discuss how she came to be a solo practitioner and how the search for an improved quality of life motivated her to take the plunge. That's going to be a recurring theme that you'll hear from our guests, quality of life as being one of the benefits of going solo. I know that was very much the case in my own experience. Lynette also discusses the role that traditional networking has played in the establishment and growth of her practice, which is an interesting counterpoint to our guest on episode 5, Derek Coburn, and shows that at least for some, traditional marketing is still a factor in attracting new clients and referral sources. Lynette is also one of those attorneys who can practice in a virtual environment, and you'll hear her describe how she practices just about anywhere that she has an internet connection. But perhaps most interestingly, you'll hear her discuss her appointment as the founding and initial program director for LEAP, the Law Entrepreneur Access Program, which is a collaboration between the University of Baltimore Law School and University of Maryland Law School under a grant from the Maryland Bar Foundation. So sit back, relax, and here's my friend Lynette. Hey there, Lynette. Welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Thank you, Neil.
Thank you for taking the time to be with me today. Lynette, describe your law firm and how you came to be a solo practitioner.
Sure. Well, I'm a solo practice attorney in Rockville, Maryland, and my clients are predominantly federal sector employees. So if you work for the federal government and you have a problem with your employment, anything from discrimination cases to discipline, a disability retirement, annuity issues, then I am able to help you out with your case.
Now, has that always been your practice area?
Well, that's the practice area I started with right out of law school. I worked at a law firm that did predominantly federal sector employment. So that's how I ended up doing that in my own private practice. But I expanded to do family law and some wage an hour just as a result of my pro bono work.
Okay. And you were with another firm when you came out of law school?
I was. I worked for a couple years with a small boutique firm in D.C. that, like I said, did predominantly federal sector employment. And I learned quite a bit there and then decided to go solo in 2006.
What motivated you to become a solo?
One of my main concerns was that I wanted to be home more. And I was commuting about 45 minutes each way to get to work and then doing the long law firm day. At the time, I had a middle school child, and I decided it would be nice to be home more with her. So I decided to go solo predominantly just so I could have a better work-life balance.
Right. And you decided to open your solo practice in Montgomery County?
I did. I worked from home for the first couple years and then got my first office space right by the courthouse in Rockville.
Well, that was going to be where I was going to head. Let's talk about working from home. What were some of the advantages, some of the disadvantages, and how did you manage the logistics of a law practice out of your home?
Well, one of the biggest advantages is you have low overhead. So I didn't have to worry about paying for, you know, the cost of having an office. And I had ample space in our home, which worked out perfectly. And, you know, thanks to technology and the internet, it was fairly easy to set up a home-based office to begin with. And where I practice in Montgomery County, our courthouse has meeting rooms for attorneys. So I was able to reserve rooms and meet with my clients at the courthouse. So I never had clients coming to my home, but I did practice from my home.
What did you do for a mailing address? Did you use your home mailing address or did you set up a PO box or something?
Yeah, I received mail at a local Parcel Plus, which is about 2 blocks from my house. And I also use them for mailing out packages and anything that need to be stamped, you know, like certified mail, et cetera. So I never had anyone have access to my home or my home address, which for me was very important for a safety concern. Now, I understand that in different practice areas and in different locations, perhaps it's not as big of a deal. But for me, I just didn't feel secure having my clients have my home address.
Yeah, and I think that's probably still true for a lot of folks. I think in the past, there's been some negative connotations to an attorney working from home because it didn't seem to some to be a professional environment. But as you state, in today's world with the internet and the virtual capabilities, the fact that you're working from home as opposed to working from an office that you're paying rent for is largely invisible.
Exactly. And I find that if you just show up, if you're available by phone, if you're responsive to emails, you're going to succeed whether you're at home or in an office.
Right. And so you met your clients at the courthouse. I'm sure that gave an air of professionalism as well.
You know, at first I was concerned because I didn't have my own office, but I had a lot of clients that were very impressed that, you know, here we are at the courthouse and I'm able to just waltz into the library and I have this professional room with a conference table. I was very surprised at how many clients were impressed.
I know in my family law practice, I occasionally meet clients at the courthouse in the rooms that are available to the attorneys, as you stated. And it does lend a different sense to the occasion. And I think it can be useful in a number of different ways.
Right. And then at our law library, we also have access to a lot of legal resources. So if I'm meeting with my client and I want to look something up in Westlaw really quick, I could do that by just going down the hall and hopping on the computer. So for the first 2 years of my practice, it was very useful. And I was doing a practice on a shoestring, which for my life at the time worked really well.
Exactly. So how long did you practice out of your home?
I did that for 2 years and then decided that I was spending a lot of time commuting to the courthouse. So I decided to get an office close to the courthouse.
And when you did that, what kind of environment were you in? Were you in a shared office space or what?
Yeah, I was in a suite full of solos. So it was a big commercial building and our names were on the directory. But when you went up, you know, we all shared a receptionist and then we had a suite that we all shared.
Right. And I think that for most solos is their entree into the office environment. It's usually with a suite of professionals, either other attorneys or professionals with synergistic kind of businesses like a CPA or a tax preparer or something along those lines.
Right. And I found that sharing space with lawyers who don't do what you do can be very handy.
Yeah. There's an opportunity for referrals, cross-referrals, people that come to you that need a legal issue addressed that you don't tackle, but one of your suite mates may do.
Exactly. It can be a very symbiotic relationship.
And so are you still in that same environment or have you moved around since then?
Well, I've only moved once since then, and I've moved into, in my town, we have historic buildings that have been converted into office space. So I am in one of those buildings, again, shared with a whole crew of solos. We all share the building, and we all practice different practice areas. So again, it has become a symbiotic relationship of referrals and advice. So I, you know, it's similar, but it's in a different type of building. It's less corporate. It's a little more down to earth.
Sounds a little more homey.
It is a little more homey, and I think my clients are more comfortable here.
And tell me a little bit about the office environment then. You share a receptionist, you have a conference room, that kind of thing?
In this building, we don't have any receptionists. We each have our own separate offices. There are two conference rooms in the building that we each kind of share. And so clients will just come directly to my door.
Okay. Well, I suspect that in some cases, people working from home, one of the things that I've heard and come across myself is that there seems to be a sense of isolation at times. You're not out in the public. You're not interfacing with other attorneys. And so there can be a loss of camaraderie if you don't supplement that in other ways. Do you feel the same way?
Yeah. When I was starting out solo and working from home, I made it a point to become very active in my local bar association and my local practice area specific bar association. And I would attend lunches. I would purposely call up attorneys and suggest that we have lunch or attend section meetings just so that I could get out and mix with other lawyers. But then again, as we discussed earlier, thanks to the internet, you know, I was part of Solo Says, which is a nationwide listserv of solos who exchange ideas. I'm also on other listservs here in Maryland. So you're never really alone. You can always reach out to somebody virtually. But I made it a point to actually get out of the house and attend meetings as much as I could.
So let's talk a little bit about, we've spoken a little bit about technology. Let's talk a little bit about what role does technology play in your success?
Well, I think that without the internet being what it is today, it would have been a lot more difficult for me to start and maintain a successful solo practice. And part of it is that I have a web presence that clients can go to, find out more about me. But I'm also able to access my files from anywhere. And I, you know, by virtue of sending documents back and forth, you know, I have a practice management software program in the cloud. So all of my practice right now is pretty much virtual.
All right. So now you've hit my sweet spot here, technology geekdom. Tell me a little bit about your anywhere access. How are you providing that capability?
I have a Synology disk station that I use, which has it's a mirror backup, and that's where I keep all of my client files on this disk station. And I can access that through their online interface, which is, again, protected through firewalls. So I'm able to dial into my system, so to speak, from anywhere. So I've accessed it from home. I've accessed it when I was overseas traveling to pull up a client document and to work on it. So I can access my clients no matter where I am. And I also use Clio, which for my practice management software. And again, you can interface with clients through Clio, and I can access that from anywhere that has an internet connection.
So you use your Synology disk station for file storage and access, but Clio for your practice management.
I do.
And for our listeners, we'll have all of that in our show notes so that you can drop in and check out those tools. What do you think is, or can you identify, what was the biggest or the best choice in terms of your technology would pay back the best dividend for you?
So far, I have to say it's been my voice over internet phone system with fax access and access to my voicemails from anywhere. I don't ever miss a call. So if I can have it forwarded to my cell phone and I can work from anywhere. Now I have an assistant. So when she's here, I don't do that. But if there are times when I want to work and she's not going to be in, I don't have to worry about being physically in my office to answer the phone. They also send my voicemail straight to email, which I find very useful because, again, I don't have to be here to get a voicemail.
Right. So you're getting your voicemail messages transcribed into email, or are they coming as an attachment?
They come as an attached sound file, so I can listen to them in real time as a voicemail.
Okay.
To my
and
email.
You indicated that you have an assistant. Is that your sole staff, or do you have other staff that support you?
Well, I have an assistant who comes to my office half days, 5 days a week. But then I also have a contract paralegal. So when I'm in litigation with my federal sector employment matters, if I need a paralegal, I have someone who has experience in federal sector work, and I will contract with her to do anything that I can do to save my client money that doesn't require a lawyer. So those are my only two staff.
How did you find your contract paralegal?
I found her through my work at the law firm in D.C.
So it's just on a pay-as-you-go basis?
It is. And it's only when I need her. And it comes in handy for her. She's a mom of three kids. And it's very handy for me. So,
do you have a story about the worst technology experiment that you tried? And something that didn't work for you?
Well, I do. And I know that this works for other lawyers. So I tried QuickBooks Pro for my bookkeeping, and I struggled with it for a good 2 years and was never able to feel very comfortable with it. I even bought, there's a book for lawyers, QuickBooks for lawyers, and I just never meshed with the program. And so, and I spent, you know, a lot of money trying to figure this out, talking to professionals about it, and it just wasn't a program that I was ever comfortable with. So I think that was the biggest waste of money. And that's not that big of a waste of money, but for me, you know, I had heard other lawyers had success with it. I just could never make it work.
Well, it's interesting because as we walk through the systems normally associated with a solo practice. I was going to get to accounting. I did the same thing. You know, I did my own accounting, if you will, maintained my own books on QuickBooks. And I'm still struggling with that issue. And I think I'm at the same crossroads you were. I've spent a lot of time and it's working, but it's not giving me all the information that I think I would like to have. And therefore, I'm going to be looking at some other choices. So what did you end up doing?
Well, for my trust accounting, I'm doing that through Clio. And for my operating account, I actually still use Intuit, which is, you know, QuickBooks. But I use it only for my operating. I'm not trying to figure out my trust account with it anymore. Because after years of dealing with that, I'm very good at using Quicken at home. And QuickBooks for my operating account works great. But when I'm trying to integrate the trust account, I could never do that with QuickBooks. So
that's interesting because I've had just the opposite experience. Using QuickBooks for my trust account has been no problem whatsoever. My operating account, I'm just not getting the type of analysis data that I would like to get out of QuickBooks. The ability to ask certain analytical questions about my operating expenses. And I'm sure it has more to do with myself and how I'm coding certain expenditures and whatnot. So you have split your accounting function. Do you use an actual live accountant at any level?
I have not yet done that. I have been doing my own books, and it's to the point where I have considered whether or not that is a good use of my time.
Right.
But I have not yet hired an accountant. And part of that is my reticence to let go of any part of my accounting, because that is so important for lawyers. And it's also important as a business person to know what's coming in and going out and where it's going.
Exactly. And I have heard and know more than a couple of attorneys who have had really serious problems when they turned over the accounting functions and check writing capabilities to somebody else. So that always, you know, keeps me awake at night.
Understandably.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about how you market your firm, how you get new customers, new clients.
Well, I've been very lucky in that I've never had to invest a lot of money in marketing. Most of my clients come to me as referrals. So I get a lot of referrals from lawyers who know me, who know the kind of work that I do, who know that I'm good with clients. So I just haven't had to purchase a lot of marketing, although I have a lot of goodwill. And I think that for me has been successful. So I will make it a point to help out other attorneys when I can. If they have a client who's having an issue that I can help them with, I'm very free with my time. I will give 20 minutes, 30 minutes of free advice usually. And I find that the return on that, on offering something of value to somebody else, is pretty high. And that has so far been sufficient for the client base that I want.
Well, I'm going to just suggest that you actually do a lot of marketing. You've already described to us your marketing efforts. It's just not something that you actually pay for. You said that you do a lot of work with your bar association. You make a point of calling other attorneys to invite them to go to lunch or attend session meetings with you. So you're actively networking with potential referral sources, aren't you?
I am. And it is all part of marketing. It's just not the expensive kind. So when it comes to investing in SEO or, you know, fancy websites, I haven't had to do that. I've been able to get enough clients just by being good to the clients that I've had and having other attorneys hear about that.
Well, what role does social media play, if any, in your marketing or branding of your firm?
Not very much. I am friends with a bunch of lawyers on Facebook. But aside from that, I don't use it for my practice.
Okay, and you do have a website.
I do. I have a website, and I do post occasional blog articles on things that come through my office that I think are important. So I think one of my more recent ones was about the importance of executing a co-op for dividing federal sector retirement benefits when you get a divorce. And that came across my desk twice, I think, in the last month, where family law attorneys didn't exactly do what they needed to do for their clients. So when I see something that comes across my desk and I think, oh, people need to hear about this, then I might write an article about it. But I'm not using the blog to attract clients. It's more of a service for people who are my existing clients.
Sure. Well, actually, I've just made a note here for all my future family law cases that involve federal workers. I would have to have a coffee meeting with you.
Yes, please do before you draft that separation agreement.
There you go. Now, did you do your own website or did you have somebody do that for you?
I did my own. Prior to the one that I have now, I had one that my husband created for me back in 2006. And recently I switched to Wix to do my website. And I found that to be extremely user-friendly and I was able to do it myself.
Great. Great. And do you do anything else in terms of branding your firm?
I don't think so. I mean, aside from my website, and again, my interactions with other lawyers, you know, I feel like you're always branding yourself every time you interact with anyone. So aside from the in-person branding that I do every time I meet someone, no, the website is it.
Okay. And how do you bill your clients? Are you billing on an hourly basis or is it flat fee?
I do a combination. I have clients who pay me by the hour. And for it depends on the case type. For those clients, it makes the most sense. I have clients who come to me and can't afford to bill by the hour. And depending on the case, I might agree to take it on a contingency. I do flat fee work for things like drafting court orders or for very simple tasks that I can easily, you know, identify how long it's going to take for discrete tasks. But for the most part, I would say that I'm an hourly biller. With the exception of when a person can't afford to do that, and if they have a great case, then I usually agree to do it on a contingency.
And how do you go about tracking your hours? Do you, you know, again, do you use technology or are you starting a stopwatch in one hand and a pen in the other?
No, I use technology, and I am a big believer that you should bill as you go and do it with a program, whatever program you're comfortable with, because you are going to lose time if you try to do it just the handwritten method. I think that if you're billing as you go, you will capture more of your time. And there are so many programs right now that allow you to do this.
And so what are you using?
I'm using Clio right now to do my time entries. Before that, like I said, I had QuickBooks. I have used PC Law. I've always had an electronic program that I've done my billing with. And part of the reason is because when I submit my fee petitions to the EEOC, which is one of the places where I litigate, it helps if you can attest under oath that you contemporaneously bill using a certain program in a certain increment. You are more likely to get your attorney fees granted.
Sure.
So.
Well, I also happen to know, Lynette, that aside from running your own practice, you're very active and have recently accepted a leadership position with the Maryland State Bar Association. Talk to our listeners a little bit about the incubator program.
I am very excited about this program. The Law Entrepreneurs for Access program, which we call LEAP, is an incubator program that is the result of a partnership between the University of Baltimore School of Law and the University of Maryland Francis King Carey School of Law. And it is funded in part by a really nice grant from the Maryland Bar Foundation. We currently have 4 lawyers who are new graduates who are working in our program, one of whom previously did have a job with the government and decided to quit that job because he wanted to go solo. And so as a result of our program, each lawyer is given an office and they are given 12 months of malpractice insurance, free Bar Association membership from the MSBA, a whole lot of other benefits, free Lexis Advanced access for their legal research. And so we're trying to teach them not only how to be good lawyers and how to practice responsibly and never find themselves in front of the grievance commission, but to also help bridge the gap for those who are unable to afford legal representation. So I would say the program has 2 goals, and one is this justice gap, and the other is to teach them how to be solo attorneys.
So as a result of participating in this program, do they have an ongoing commitment to supporting pro bono or reduced fee cases for some period of time?
They do. For the first 6 months of the program, they have a pretty heavy pro bono / low bono, which is a sliding scale fee commitment. And for the second 6 months of the program, we envision that they are going to be gearing up towards opening their own office so that the pro bono requirement is lessened, but it's still there.
And the idea is that they would stay 12 months in the program, and then you'll have new applicants that you vet and select.
Exactly. It's a 12-month program. And so at the end of the 12 months, we envision that they will be either be able to open their own offices or perhaps go to other solo or small firm offices where they can take the skills that they've learned and apply it towards their practice.
And you're not tooting your own horn enough here, Lynette. What is your role with the LEAP program?
Well, I am the program director. So if you think of us as a law firm, I would be the partner running the law firm. I am doing this through Civil Justice Incorporated, which is a nonprofit that has been tasked with running the incubator. So technically, I am an employee of Civil Justice. But I am directing these lawyers in their cases. So we're having case management meetings. I am teaching them basics about how to operate a business. I am teaching them basics about how to be lawyers, how to write pleadings, how to handle being in the court. Anything that you would need to learn as a brand new lawyer, we are trying to teach it to them through this program. And so I'm the one tasked with doing that.
Terrific. Well, as we wrap up here, Lynette, let me ask you, if aside from one of your participants in the incubator program through LEAP, if someone were to come to you and say they're thinking about starting their own law firm, what's the first thing that comes to mind that you would want to share with them about that decision?
Well, I think that I would first want to make sure they were doing it for the right reason. I know a lot of solos recently have not done it by choice. They've been doing it out of necessity. So if someone were to come to me and they were considering doing this, I would really want to flesh out, well, why are you doing this? Because it's not the easiest road to take. However, I found it to be one of the most satisfying ways to practice for me personally. So I think the very first thing is what is inspiring you to do this? And then second, you know, have you planned? Because it really does take some planning to be a successful solo. You can't just decide one day to hang a shingle and expect things to fall into place. So
yeah, I think that's so true. And it's, you know, I think that we get solo practitioners from a number of different sources, some just coming out of law school, some leaving other firms. And it's interesting to see who's done the planning and who hasn't. And just been my experience, and yours might be different, is that the law school students seem to be doing more planning about going into solo practice, whereas the folks coming out of a practice kind of taking that leap off the cliff and just hoping that it works. I don't know if that's been your experience or not.
I've had a combination of experience. You know, I do volunteer work with our county's pro bono clinics, and I've met a lot of young people who are coming out of law school and trying to go solo. And some of them have not been able to find work. And so for some people, I think they've done it just out of necessity and haven't really had the time to plan it. But there are very good programs in law schools now, which they didn't have when I was going to law school, I will just mention, for law office management. So for example, at University of Baltimore, they have a law office management course. At University of Maryland, Carey School of Law, they have a law office management course. And these courses are preparing students in a way that I think lawyers 10 years ago were not prepared. So I think the students who have taken those courses and are coming out of law schools are very much more prepared than the students who are in the job market, can't find a job, and decide to go solo.
Interesting. Well, Lynette, it's been delightful having you on The Law Entrepreneur. I want to thank you again for taking the time to be with us. And in case any of our listeners want to get a hold of you, what's the best way to do that?
The best way to do that would be through my website, which is www.whitfieldlegal.com.
Well, terrific. Well, once again, thanks so very much for being on The Law Entrepreneur.
Thank you, Neil.
Well, there you have it, fellow law entrepreneurs. Thank you for listening and being a part of today's program. The utmost compliment you could pay me is to go over to iTunes, subscribe to the podcast, and leave a strong 5-star review if you think the podcast and what we're trying to do here is worthwhile. Feel free to share the link to the podcast with your friends, family, and coworkers. I would be very appreciative if you did. So until next time, thanks again for listening to The Law Entrepreneur.